Hey everybody, before we get started with this episode, I'm excited to let you all know that I have written another true crime book. Cults Uncovered is being published by the amazing publisher Dorleen Kindersley on the 4th of February in America and the 6th of February elsewhere. Cults Uncovered is compiled of stories of some of the world's most disturbing cults and the megalomania that created them. It details the beginnings of self-proclaimed messiahs and follows their rise through subjection, abuse, manipulation, and ultimately, their downfall. It's available to pre-order at most bookstores, including Amazon, Waterstones, Penguin, Books A Million, WH Smith, and Barnes & Noble. At just £8.99 or $14.99, it's a very affordable price and I would love for you guys to check it out if you're interested. If you do get a copy, please hit me up on social media and let me know what you think. I really enjoyed writing this book. I've included Amazon links in the show notes. Also, if you see it in bookstores, please take a photo and tag me. I love to see how far my books have travelled across the world. Thank you for listening, and now on with today's episode. Welcome to Morbidology, the podcast. I'm your host, Emily G. Thompson, author of Unsolved Child Murders and co-author of Unsolved Murders, True Crime Cases Uncovered. The 2000 disappearance of teenager Leanne Tiernan from Bramley, Leeds, sparked one of the largest manhunts in West Yorkshire Police's history. During the painstaking search, police officers visited more than 10,000 homes and scoured almost 40 drains. Leanne's disappearance led to a first in British criminal investigation and unmasked a prolific sexual predator known locally as the Pet Man. Leanne Tiernan was a 16-year-old girl from Bramley, Leeds. She was a happy-go-lucky student at West Leeds High School, where she was studying for her GCSE exams. She was a typical teenager, and while her pierced eyebrow and taste for rock music may have hinted at teenage rebellion, Leanne was a homebird. She was exceptionally close with her mother and her older sister, and she loved spending time with her grandparents. She was also an active member in the local church. She was extremely thoughtful of those around her and was a loyal friend, sister and daughter.
She was the nuttiest person you could ever met.
It was the 26th of November 2000 when 16-year-old Leanne Tiernan placed a kiss on her mother, Sharon Hawkhead's cheek, before she and her best friend Sarah departed for an afternoon of Christmas shopping in Leeds city centre.
We've been shopping and we're having a laugh about boyfriends, usual stuff. Leanne, she was very generous. She spent the last money on me. She borrowed the money so she could get my Christmas presents. It was a day to remember because at least we weren't sad. But we're a happy day.
Later on, Leanne and Sarah caught the number 16 bus back home to the Bramley area where they both lived. After getting off the bus after 20 minutes, they headed towards Sarah's house before both parting ways at Howley Gill at around 4:50pm to both walk home. Typically from here, Leanne would have walked down an unlit track that was surrounded by trees before cutting onto a council estate to reach her home. It should have taken Leanne around 15 minutes to get home, however, she never arrived. This was completely out of character for Leanne, who had never ran away from home before, and if she were going to be late home, she made sure to call her mother, Sharon. It wouldn't be long before it was noticed that Leanne was missing because Sarah had called Leanne's home to chat and explained to Sharon that they parted ways at 4:50pm and that Leanne should have been home by now.
Phone went to 5:20, so I answered it, thinking it was possibly Leanne saying that she might be a bit late.
And it was actually Sarah wanting to speak to Leanne. So she says, oh, she's not back yet. So I phoned a mobile and it rang on about 20 times. And it just cut off. So I thought, little trollop, she's ignoring me for some reason. So I tried it again. That's when it really hits you then, when you suddenly get a policeman in your house and you're actually having to say that your daughter's missing. And you don't know why or where she is.
Sharon and the family went to the local church to grab some torches and started to search the streets for Leanne, but to no avail. Sharon then called police and reported her daughter missing. A search party was assembled while her family made tearful pleas on national television for her return. Quote, everybody is out looking for Leanne at the moment. I'm on the edge of my nerves. I can't think straight. I'm just praying for her, end quote, said Sharon. Her 19-year-old sister, Michelle, said, quote, please ring, we all love you and we want to make sure that you're okay, end quote. Meanwhile, Leanne's father, Michael, who was divorced from Sharon, cut his holiday in Tenerife short to assist in the search for his daughter. Almost as immediately as Leanne was reported missing, the community rallied together and assisted in the search. The investigation was headed by Detective Superintendent Chris Gregg.
Leanne was last seen in Huffley Lane near to Wither Park Road. She lived some three-quarters of a mile away at Lansdear Mount. Now, we had to calculate what we would have expected the route to be that she walked, and we call that the Red Route. The houses along that Red Route were searched, some 1,200 houses. It was a logistical problem to make sure that all these areas were searched thoroughly.
Police and the Calder Valley Search and Rescue Team were assisted by around 40 volunteers. They trudged through woodland and waste ground while a West Yorkshire police helicopter hovered overhead, searching for Leanne. Meanwhile, officers carried out house-to-house inquiries and routinely sent text messages to Leanne's phone, urging her to get in contact with somebody if she received the text messages. Missing person posters were printed and distributed in the area. They described Leanne as being 5 foot 4 inches tall, slim, with brown hair, fair complexion, and pierced ears and eyebrows. When she disappeared, she was wearing a navy blue Elise sweatshirt, a black polo shirt, and black trousers. Leanne's boyfriend, Wayne, was extremely proactive in the search and plastered the posters far and wide. Photographs of a gold wishbone ring and a titanium belly button ring, similar to those that Leanne had purchased in Argos on the day that she disappeared, were circulated in the area, and people were asked to keep an eye out for them. Within days, the search for Leanne was stepped up while Detective Superintendent Chris Gregg announced that four people had been in contact with police to inform them that they had spotted somebody that resembled Leanne in the Leeds area. Quote, I must stress that these are unconfirmed sightings, end quote, he added. Search and rescue experts were called in to assist with the search, along with their specially trained sniffer dogs, while divers scoured a Leeds canal. Police urged locals to check their garden sheds and garages, particularly those near the wooded footpath at Howley Gill, where Leanne was believed to have vanished. Next, we will hear from Adam Gregory of the National Crime Faculty.
When I first visited Huffley Gill, it just strikes you as an awful place to be. It's shrouded by bushes and overgrown on both sides, and it's one of those places that I suppose most people would try and avoid unless they had reason to go there. Huffley Gill itself is surrounded by housing. Regardless of which direction you move away from Huffley Gill, you're straight into residential area. It's a very high risk location for an abduction.
Meanwhile, a reconstruction was conducted to retrace Leanne's last steps. Her sister, Michelle, wore a dark sweatshirt and black trousers, identical to what Leanne was wearing when she vanished. She joined Leanne's best friend, Sarah, as they recreated their walk from the bus stop.
I did the reconstruction because I just wanted to help. Ended up getting off the 16 bus where she would have normally got off with Sarah. And then I just followed the route she would have normally taken. I think we were clutching at straws, but we were kind of hoping that she had run away and nothing bad had happened, even though it was so out of character for her.
It was hoped that the recreation would refresh people's memories. Michelle and Sarah were followed by police officers who handed out photographs of Leanne to people they crossed paths with. Quote, we are hoping that by recreating the events of last Sunday, it may help to jog people's memories as to any possible sightings of Leanne. Michelle is really upset about what has happened with her sister, and it has taken a lot of courage for her to do what she has done today. We can't explain why Leanne has disappeared at this stage, but we have to remain hopeful that she is going to make a safe return, end quote, said Detective Superintendent Chris Gregg. Shortly thereafter, police said that they were wanting to identify a man who was estimated to be in his 30s that was seen walking his dog in the Howley Gill area just as Leanne and Sarah parted ways. They said that he wasn't a suspect, but was just a person of interest who was in the area around the same time that Leanne vanished and may have some information. They also announced that they were widening the search in the Bramley area and making inquiries with Leanne's friends and family to find out if there were any reason why she may not want to come home. They were adamant that Leanne would not run away from home. She had no reason to. She got on well with her family, had a boyfriend, and was looking forward to Christmas. She had no history of running away and no problems at either school or home. Her mock GCSEs were approaching, but she had been coping with them just fine. Quote, when I last saw her, she was fine and happy and bubbly. All of her clothes are in the house and her makeup, her hairbrush, her hairspray and everything, end quote, said Sharon. Her father, Michael, added, quote, if anyone saw Leanne or saw anything, no matter how insignificant, please get in touch. We want to come to a close with this and find Leanne, end quote. The first week slowly trickled by with no leads as to what happened to Leanne. As mentioned earlier, police had been routinely texting and calling Leanne's mobile phone, but no reply ever came.
Hi, it's Leanne. I can't get to the phone right now. Call that later. Bye.
Police soon uncovered that Leanne's mobile phone had been switched off at around 4:50 p.m., shortly after Leanne and Sarah parted ways. This only increased the fears that Leanne may have been abducted. Then on the 8th of December, police made an alarming appeal. They announced that Crimeline's hotline had received an anonymous phone call from somebody who said that they had seen a girl struggling with a man in a silver car near the woodland where she disappeared. Detective Superintendent Chris Gregg, who was leading the investigation, urged the anonymous caller to call back. With this ominous new lead, Sharon and Michael made another tearful statement. Quote, as each day goes by, it doesn't look very hopeful. And yes, think that someone may have grabbed her and I think she might now be dead, end quote, said Sharon.
There were times when we were feeling pretty much down that she may have been taken and killed, but we really couldn't let ourselves or allow ourselves to believe that. Every day when you don't know, you wake up and wonder, is she going to be coming home today?
Police switched their focus to the wooded area that Leanne would have walked through to get home. By this point in the investigation, they had already searched the area extensively and found no evidence of a struggle on the unlit wooded footpath leading from the bus stop to Leanne's home. Thousands of garages and sheds had been searched, along with hundreds of industrial units and houses. They had even scoured drain shafts at Howley Gill near Bramley and were planning on revisiting them in the hopes that they may have missed a clue the first time around. By mid-December, police publicly announced that they now feared that Leanne's body may be down an ancient well shaft that they believed was hidden within a maze of underground drainage systems. They soon enough called in experts from Yorkshire Water to help pinpoint the ancient well that they believed was near the bus stop that Leanne and Sarah got off at. Detective Superintendent Chris Gregg said that it was important that they search the well if it existed. Quote, it's been a crucial part of the search, but it's extremely difficult and potentially dangerous, end quote, he said. However, despite an exhaustive search of the maze of wells, Leanne's body was not discovered, nor were any clues as to what could have happened to her. With Christmas fast approaching, Sharon once again made a tearful plea for her daughter's return. Quote, I want my daughter home for Christmas. The last 25 days have been dreadful. I've lurched from despair to hysteria. If somebody has her against her will, for God's sake, let her go, end quote. She told the media that she had purchased Leanne a few Christmas gifts in the hopes that she would be back home in time for the festivities. Then on the 22nd of December, police issued an e-fit of the dog walker that they wanted to identify and question in regards to Leanne's disappearance. They said that the man was in his 30s and was walking a small black dog on the wooded path Leanne would have walked down to get home. He was described as being a stocky man, standing at around 5 feet 8 inches tall, with a round reddish face, which may have been scarred. Police had already made an appeal for the man to come forward, but to no avail. They had hoped that somebody may recognise the E-Fit and provide police with a name. Quote, "This man could have vital information to help us. There is no suggestion he is involved with the disappearance," end quote, said Detective Superintendent Chris Gregg. The new year brought a grim new update when police admitted that they now believed that Leanne may have come to serious harm. Quote, "While we have to remain hopeful, we have to be realistic, and there is grave concern that she may have come to serious harm," end quote, said Detective Superintendent Chris Gregg. In a bid to bolster leads, a photograph of Leanne was displayed on 1.5 million milk cartons nationwide. A spokesman for the National Missing Persons Hotline said, quote, "This technique has proved successful, but we reserve it for children considered most vulnerable. We hope it may jog somebody's memory," end quote. For over 6 months, there were no new updates on Leanne's disappearance, and then on the 21st of August, a man walking his dog in Linley Wood, near Otley, discovered the fully clothed body of a young woman.
I was walking through the woods when I saw this package. So I stopped and investigated it. And I wasn't quite sure what to make of it, really. It looked like, well, there was this bag in a duvet cover. I noticed then that there was a kind of shallow grave dug around it. So I went to see the police. As the policeman cut down the bag, I saw a sock, and I realised then that we'd actually found a body.
The area was around 10 miles away from where Leanne disappeared. She had been wrapped in 9 plastic bin liners and then wrapped in a quilt cover and dumped in undergrowth in the thickly wooded area. The young woman was subsequently identified as Leanne Tiernan via fingerprints, and she had been strangled to death with cable ties and a knotted scarf that remained wrapped tightly around her neck and wrists. Due to advanced decomposition, it could not be determined whether she was sexually assaulted or not. Detective Superintendent Chris Gregg announced that police believed that Leanne had been murdered elsewhere and then her body dumped in the isolated spot. He said that further testing would be carried out to determine how long her body had been there, but said he speculated that she hadn't been there since November when she vanished.
Offenders don't just pick random locations when they choose to put a body away from where it's been murdered. They go to places that they're comfortable in, that they're familiar with. That starts to reinforce the idea that there is a strong association to Linley Woods.
The grim discovery led to a murder inquiry consisting of 50 officers. Police urged anybody with any information to please come forward. The area where Leanne's body was discovered was a scenic area that was frequented by dog walkers and joggers, and they called for anybody who had recently been in the area to contact police. When Leanne's body was discovered, her personal items that she had with her when she disappeared were nowhere to be found. These items included Leanne's coat, boots, mobile phone, umbrella, keys, coins, and the Christmas presents that she had purchased for a friend in Leeds. Police were keen to track down these items and displayed copies of them to the public and asked them to keep an eye out.
Telephone call from the police to say that they'd found a body in North Yorkshire.
I can't really remember much about the point when the police actually came to tell us about it all.
I got a phone call from my mum saying, "I think you better come home, I think they've found something." It hit my mum then, because she burst into tears in the garden, so I had to sort of like walk her in.
It's like watching TV and it's happening to somebody else. It just feels so unreal. It don't feel like it's you that's sitting there.
At the time when they first found out, they couldn't really tell us exactly how she died, but they said that it looked like strangulation.
The news was crushing to Leanne's family, who were comforted by their loved ones. Quote, "Police called me to tell me they had found a body, and I have felt absolutely terrible ever since. All I am doing is drinking coffee and smoking cigarettes," end quote, said Sharon. Leanne's family made an emotional plea to the public during a press conference and urged them to help catch Leanne's killer. Quote, "Leanne was a lovely girl and we miss her terribly. She was my baby, she was my best mate. We would ask anyone who knows anything about who has done this to contact police, end quote, pleaded Sharon. Overcome with emotion, Sharon collapsed and had to be taken away. She was followed off camera by Leanne's father, Michael, and her older sister, Michelle. Police soon announced that they believed that Leanne was murdered and then held in cold storage for months before her killer decided to dispose of her body. In fact, forensic experts said that they believed that Leanne's body had only been in Lindley Wood for a matter of days or weeks. There was speculation that Leanne may have gone to the home of somebody that she knew, where she took off her coat and shoes before being killed. Detective Superintendent Chris Gregg said he believed that she was most likely killed shortly after she vanished, due to the fact that her hair was still tied in a ponytail, like when she disappeared. Quote, "We have no idea where Leanne had been until she was taken to Lindley Wood. We are exploring the possibility that she has been in someone's house and taken her coat and boots off. It's a possibility we can't rule out that she has gone to the house of someone she knew," end quote, he declared. The man who discovered Leanne's body said that the body wasn't there 3 months ago when he was walking through the same area. He also said that there were very few pine needles on the plastic bags, indicating that Leanne's body hadn't been in the woods for that long.
"When Leanne's body was found, we wondered why Lindley Woods. To us, there must have been some significance to that. It wasn't coincidence that Leanne's body had been taken up to Lindley Woods. Her body could have been disposed of anywhere in the Bramley area. Bramley Falls area, where it's a large wooded area, that would have been an ideal place we would have expected Leanne's body to have been taken and disposed of. Springwood, railway tunnel, all these places would have been a good place for a killer to dispose of a body. But no, the person who'd killed Leanne wanted to take her to Lindley Woods, travel 16 miles to take her body there."
Archaeologists and entomologists were called to the scene to examine the ground and insect activity to try and determine when Leanne's body was dumped there. Eddie McGee, a former SAS soldier and expert tracker, also embarked on the scene to attempt to trace the route used from the road to where Leanne's body was found. The archaeologists discovered a round hole beside Leanne's body that was 2 feet wide and 1 foot deep. It was speculated that the killer had attempted to bury Leanne's body before being thwarted by tree roots or startled by somebody in the area. Police also said that they were looking into whether there were links with Leanne's murder and the 1992 murder of Yvonne Fitt, a Bradford sex worker who was stabbed to death and then dumped just yards away from where Leanne was dumped. Yvonne's body was discovered by a man collecting mushrooms, and it was believed that she may have been there for up to 2 months. Yvonne's killer was never identified.
"Is it just coincidence that two female bodies have turned up in the same woods? Or is it more than that? Clearly we've got to look very carefully at that particular crime. And we've got to make sure that if there is any evidence whatsoever there to be found to connect or otherwise tailor to that crime, then we've got to investigate it."
Detective Superintendent Chris Gregg said that there was no evidence that could link the cases, but said that they were keeping an open mind and looking for potential similarities. In the wake of the discovery, samples from hundreds of men in the area where Leanne disappeared and the area where her body was discovered were taken, while forensic experts examined the crime scene for forensic evidence, which could hopefully lead to Leanne's killer. A 20,000 square meter area surrounding the crime scene was cordoned off as discarded bottles, cigarettes, and crisp packets were collected and forensically examined. Police questioned why the killer had decided to move Leanne's body from where it had been stored to the woodland. Quote, "Why suddenly has Leanne's body been possibly taken from what was considered to be a safe and secure storage place, which had certainly gone undetected until now? There's got to be a reason for that. We would like people to think, has something happened in their normal working lives that has caused someone to need to take some quick action? Something happened that has forced them to move the body quickly," end quote, said Detective Superintendent Chris Gregg. A criminal profiler was brought in to build a profile of the killer, while a £5,000 reward was posted for information which could lead to his arrest and conviction. Pandia Health is helping women all across the United States take control of their reproductive health. Pandia Health, which is the only woman-founded, woman-led, doctor-founded and led company in birth control delivery, is on a mission to make women's lives easier by bringing our birth control directly to our doors. Skip the monthly trip to the pharmacy and never fear running out of birth control again with Pandia. If you have an active prescription and insurance to cover medications, Pandia Health will send your birth control out for free, along with some amazing goodies, such as Hi-Chew, chocolate, tea, and more. If you need a doctor consultation to change pills or birth control methods, or just don't have an active prescription, for just $28 a year, you can have access to Pandia Health's doctors, saving you a trip to the pharmacy. Enter promo code MORBIDOLOGY for $5 off a doctor's consultation if needed. Pandia Health is about care, conscience, and confidentiality, and I'm so pleased that they've sponsored this episode. So head on over to pandiahealth.com. That is PandiaHealth.com and sign up today. The link is in the description. Staying with the theme of morbidology, I'd like to take a second to talk about a different kind of crime, bad hygiene. This episode is sponsored by Ball Wash, an all-vegan, all-natural product made in the USA, especially for men. Well, and women that are fed up with their unhygienic men. Just in time for Valentine's Day, Ball Wash has created amazing and hilarious gift sets. One which is ironically called I'm Nuts About You. This gift set includes Ball Wash, an activated charcoal wash packed with essential oils and plant extracts, Nut Rub, solid cologne for below the belt, and Sack Spray, a portable deodorizing spray, perfect for on-the-go men. The retail price is $45, but with my promo code MORBID20, you will get 20% off. So stop giving lame presents for Valentine's Day and get something that's a fun gift for the both of you. With over 200,000 satisfied customers, you won't regret it. Several days later, Sharon spoke with the media to relay her belief that Leanne was murdered by a local man who knew her and her family. According to Sharon, there was just no way that Leanne was abducted by a stranger. Quote, "She was a feisty little madam, and if a stranger had tried to get her into a car, she would have screamed the place down. Nobody would have made her do something she didn't want to do," end quote. Around the same time, police publicly described the quilt cover that Leanne was found wrapped in the hopes that somebody could identify it. It was a floral, double-sized quilt cover made of cotton and polyester with plastic studs on the bottom. The front was dotted with pastel-coloured flowers in rows with a floral border, and also had four eternity bows. Following the appeal, a woman from Sheffield came forward with an identical quilt cover that she had purchased in Rackhams, Sheffield. Police were now attempting to identify the manufacturer and which other shops had sold the product. On the 28th of September, just the day after what would have been Leanne's birthday, she was laid to rest. Her funeral was held at Sanford Methodist Church near her home. Leanne had been baptised in this church and helped out in the Sunday school each week. On top of her coffin was a floral tribute which read, quote, "Night night baby," end quote. Around 150 friends and family packed into the small church to pay their final respects, while another 50 gathered outside to listen to the service on loudspeakers. They all wore bright colours to commemorate Leanne's bubbly personality.
It was just a celebration of Leanne's life as opposed to a morbid funeral, because Leanne wasn't a morbid person. She was really vibrant and full of everything.
For someone to be taken away from you, it's just a big smack in the face, really. You read it and you watch it every day. It's like, no, that will happen to me. And it does. It does happen.
Choosing flowers for your own daughter's funeral is the hardest thing in the world. You know that these flowers will be going on your daughter's coffin. I feel angry at just the fact that she's gone, but it's a feeling of missing her.
Deaconess Janet Durbin described Leanne as a special young lady who brought love and happiness into everybody's lives. Following the service, Leanne was buried in a private ceremony. The following month, police received two tips. One was from a couple who were driving on the B6451 when they saw two men manoeuvring a bundle across the bonnet of a red car and then moving it through the grass with their feet. They said that the car had a lot of chrome tin and that the two men were in their 20s, of average build, and were casually dressed. The second tip came from an elderly couple who saw a man driving on the B6451 between 11 a.m. and 11:30 a.m. on the 13th of August. The couple said that they saw the man lifting what they described as a loose bundle of rags. According to the female witness, she believed that the rags were a pair of flowery curtains. They described the man as being in his mid-40s, white and stocky, standing at around 5 feet 10 inches tall with grey hair and a casual shirt and trousers.
The duvet cover was a floral design. We had a lady who, 7 days before Leanne's body was found, she was driving past Lindleywoods with her husband and saw a man lifting out what she thought was a bundle of rags from a car boot. And she described it being a floral bundle. And she thought, I hope that man's not going to go and dump those rags in the woods. We don't believe it was a bundle of rags. We believe that was Leanne's body.
Just several days later, a 45-year-old man was arrested in connection with Leanne's murder. He was identified as John Taylor from Bramley. John had been identified as the likely killer following an extensive forensic inquiry. Peter Grant, a major crime specialist advisor from the Forensic Science Service, had coordinated the complex scientific investigation with a team of forensic experts. They had run numerous tests in a bid to build a forensic picture of the offender, and it was this combined with tracing the items found at the crime scene which eventually led police directly to John. A dog collar, which had been used to secure a bin bag around Leanne's neck, was sold from a mail order company, and only 6 had been sold in the area, one of which was sold to John.
The detectives were tasked with ringing over 200 outlets, and of course, with a dog collar off the shelf, customer details records generally aren't kept. But we considered it a useful line of inquiry just in case one of them did have any records. It was not an enjoyable task, I'm sure, but it turned out to be the crucial task. We found out that John Taylor worked for Parcel Force, which was one of the Royal Mail companies, and we had a Royal Mail connection with the cable ties. He lived in Bramley. He'd lived there all his life. He was living just over half a mile from where Leanne had been last seen. This was a person who now was emerging to us as a very, very interesting suspect.
Then a check on the yellow cable ties revealed that they were the ones used by Royal Mail, where John had worked. Furthermore, carpet fibres inside John's home matched the fibres on Leanne's jumper. John had ripped up the carpet and burned it, presumably following Leanne's murder, but tiny fibres were discovered on floor nails. Twine found in John's home matched the twine used to tie the bin bags around Leanne's body, and DNA testing on hair discovered on the scarf around Leanne's neck was also matched to John. The combination of evidence was the breakthrough that police needed. During their investigation, the team of forensic experts had even run testing on animal hairs that were discovered on Leanne's body. Samples of the dog hair were taken to a Texan university which had developed DNA profiling for dogs. While the dog hair wasn't a fruitful lead because the dog that John had owned at the time of Leanne's abduction had died, it was the first time that such DNA testing had been conducted during a British criminal investigation. It was theorised that the man seen walking the small black dog on the day that Leanne vanished was John. John was a divorced father of two and parcel delivery worker. In 1977, he married a school teacher named Janet, but the duo divorced in the late 1990s. He also ran a pet food business from his home, which earned him the trust of the neighbourhood children. But behind that gentle front, a sadistic man was lurking. Throughout the 1980s and 1990s, John had bred Border Terriers, Lurchers and Jack Russells, and he teased and tortured them. A former friend of John told the Daily Mirror that John took great pleasure in capturing rabbits, throttling them, and then mutilating them in the woods where Leanne's body was later found. On another occasion, John brought 28 ferrets, a duck, a polecat, and 40 chickens from an auction and killed them all. When his home was searched, police discovered numerous deceased animals buried in his backyard, including a small black dog who had suffered from a crushed skull. The discovery led to speculation that John had killed his dog after they released an e-fit of the man seen walking his dog in the area that Leanne disappeared. Quote, Taylor appeared to be normal, but he is not. He has an extremely dangerous nature. This is displayed in the way he has treated animals, end quote, said Detective Superintendent Chris Gregg. Next, we will hear from Deborah Benjamin, an ex-girlfriend of John.
We was dating each other, and then a few weeks later, I thought we'd get on good and that lot, and he asked me to move in with him. So I moved into his house. A couple of months after I'd moved in, and he just started changing, demanding this, demanding that. He wanted me to wear more skirts and more blouses. Become more feminine, really, which it's not me. The sexual side of things, well, there was none, really. What he did, it was just sickening. He got his kicks out of being sadistic and tying up, basically.
What did he want to tie you up with?
Cable ties. The cable ties was in his drawer, loose, with bundles of different colours, different lengths. They were at hand when he needed them. Yeah, he wouldn't stop. Felt as if I just felt like rape. Two detectives were knocking at my door, and they mentioned his name, and asked what it was about, and then they asked me to describe how he tied me, in which way he tied me, which I told him he one cable tie on each hand, wrist, behind my back with another cable tie, tucked in between, joined in the middle.
In February, John pleaded guilty to kidnapping Leanne. He was not asked to enter a plea to the murder charge in court until a later date. That later date came in July, and John pleaded guilty to the murder of Leanne as well. During the sentencing phase, Leeds Crown Court heard how John had grabbed Leanne on the unlit wooded path. He then blindfolded her and forced her to walk to his terrace house, hidden under his coat. Prosecutor Robert Smith said that it was likely that John had sexually assaulted Leanne at his home before strangling her. After the murder, John went to bed like normal, and then the next day, he wrapped Leanne's body up in bin liners and hid her under pallets in his garden. He then took her body back into the house and kept it stored in a compartment under his sofa before stuffing it into his freestanding freezer. It was believed that the freezer broke down, forcing John to dump Leanne in Lindley Wood. When asked why he had killed Leanne, John replied, quote, I have no idea, end quote. He did confess that he had been out that evening looking for a girl to snatch and said that Leanne was simply in the wrong place at the wrong time. By pleading guilty, the details of what happened in John's house that evening will never fully be known. He was subsequently sentenced to two life sentences with a minimum of 30 years. While handing down the sentence, Mr. Justice Astill told John, quote, You're a dangerous sexual sadist. This was a planned, premeditated encounter. You were in this area for the purpose. This was not an act of impulse. You chose a secluded place and a vulnerable young girl who served your purpose. You can expect to spend the rest of your life in custody, end quote.
It would be very easy to now put John Taylor to one side and forget about him. He's serving two life sentences. But we're trying to piece together what he's possibly done before that and since.
People that carry out these sort of offences tend to have a criminal background, tend to be people that are known to police, tend to be people that will be on the initial list of potential suspects when it's discovered that there's a murder. John Taylor doesn't really fit that mould. He's someone that has a family background, that has children, that at least on the surface appears to have maintained a relatively normal family life. He's someone that has clearly got to a particular stage in life and has committed this offence But the trail that is usually left that leads up to that event is simply not there, or was simply not there in police records.
Following the sentencing phase, police revealed that they were planning on investigating four other murders spanning back to 20 years ago that bore the hallmarks of Leanne's murder, including the murder of Yvonne Fitt, which I briefly spoke about earlier, the 2001 Bradley murder of sex worker Rebecca Hall, who was found beaten to death in the city's red light district, the murder of Lindsay Jo Reimer, who was found strangled or smothered in a canal in Hebben Bridge in 1994, and the 1996 murder of Deborah Wood, whose partially burned body was found in Leeds, wrapped up in bin liners and bedding. Like Leanne, she too appeared to have been frozen. With this new information out in the public, a sex worker from Glasgow who once worked in one of the city's brothels came forward to identify John as a regular visitor. Following the revelation, police announced that they would also be investigating whether John was involved in the unsolved murders of six sex workers in Glasgow: Diane McAnally, Karen McGregor, Leona McGovern, Marjorie Roberts, Tracy Wilde, and Alison Wallace. Quote, "The fact that a prostitute has said she provided sex services to him in Glasgow makes him a prime candidate for investigation into any connections with the murders here," end quote, said a Strathclyde police insider. Police had planned on cross-referencing the murders with John's work as a delivery driver. While John was being investigated for several other murders, he confessed to two rapes, one of which occurred in 1988 in Howley Gill, where Leanne was abducted.
"I left to walk to school to pick my daughter up. I was going to cut across the gill. I'd only taken about four or five steps when I was grabbed from behind. He pulled a knife out. He then said, 'Lay down flat,' so I lay down. He still had the knife in his right hand."
The other happened near Howley Gill in 1989.
"I saw a tall man wearing a black mask over his face and a knife in his hand. By this time, my daughter had started crying. He started to take my cardigan off. I thought in my mind that this man wasn't just a burglar. He said that he went to different parts of the country and did the same thing to other women."
John was handed down another life sentence, during which John Norman Jones said, quote, "You pose a danger to any woman who passes nearby," end quote. The rape convictions were made possible by evidence collected during the inquiry into Leanne's murder. Initially, John had denied any involvement in the sex attacks, but when presented with the DNA evidence against him, he had no other option but to accept his guilt. In late 2018, John made headlines once again when he appeared before Leeds Crown Court and pleaded guilty to 16 more offences, including three of rape, which he had committed from the 1970s through to the 1990s. The other offences included possessing an offensive weapon, indecent assault, kidnapping, and unlawful wounding. During the sentencing phase, prosecutors detailed John's sexual assaults. The assaults included one on a 7-year-old girl who he tied to a pole at a church and sexually assaulted, and then subsequently stood by her bedroom window for weeks, waving and smiling at her to frighten her into staying silent. Another attack was on a pregnant woman while her three young children watched on. As time progressed, so did DNA technology, and John had been linked to the crimes via DNA. He was sentenced to a whole life tariff, meaning that he will die behind bars.
"It's not very nice sitting there knowing that somebody's actually done this to your child. I do feel a kind of connection with families that are actually in the position that I was in before they actually caught John Taylor. The fact that I actually know who killed Leanne didn't make things any easier for me. But then again, I suppose if I didn't know, I would be wanting to know. There were just the three of us, and we were just sort of like us against everybody else, if you like. Now it's just the two of us, it does feel a bit strange. I keep expecting a little voice piping up from the back saying, 'Oh no, we don't want that, we want this.' And it doesn't happen, and it's just funny, it's just strange. He took half of my life. My life's always been for my kids. I've always done everything I possibly could for them. And which it just makes it seem even more unfair that we had so little, but we always had each other, and he had to pick Leanne."
The disappearance of Leanne Tiernan sparked one of the largest manhunts in West Yorkshire Police's history. Hundreds of homes were searched, along with thousands of sheds and garages, while stretches of canal and sewers were scoured. All along, Leanne's killer had been right under their noses, hiding behind a facade of normalcy as the trustworthy pet man. But behind closed doors, the pet man was nothing more than a sexual sadist who had a long and disturbing history of sexual assault. While John Taylor has been suspected of numerous other murders, there has not yet been enough evidence for any further convictions. Well, guys, that is it for this episode of Morbidology. As always, thank you so, so much for listening. I'd like to give a big, massive thank you to my new Patreon supporters, Heather Brown and Elena Clock. I'm currently working on my new exclusive episode for Patreon and Himalaya Plus, so if you want more Morbidology, check that out. I've included the links in the description. The support really does go such a long way in helping Morbidology continue to grow. So thank you. Once again, I'd also like to thank everybody who has taken the time to leave a positive review or rating on iTunes or wherever else you get your podcasts. I am eternally grateful. Also, make sure you visit us at morbidology.com for more information about this episode and to read our true crime articles. And stay tuned to the end of this episode to hear a promo for the amazing true crime podcast, True Crime and Wine Time. Until next time, take care of yourselves and have an amazing week.
Hello, true crime friends. I am Terry Dussold, the host of True Crime and Wine Time, a podcast where I cover many types of true crimes while enjoying wine time. I cover everything from missing persons, serial killers, art thefts, and many gruesome crimes that other podcasts shy away from. Join me for some true crime and wine time.